We are spending the hour today talking about work and the pandemic, including your experiences. And for the rest of the hour, we are going to focus on women, especially since women have been leaving the workforce in droves since the pandemic started. We want to hear from you. Are you a working woman, a woman with a family? Tell us what it's been like for you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, one thing that we have learned from this pandemic is that it exacerbates what's already broken, especially when it comes to inequalities. And that is true for women's experiences. Discrimination, work-family balance, challenges have been around a long time. Just ask former Massachusetts Governor Jane Swift. When she became acting governor in 2001 after Paul Cellucci was appointed U.S. ambassador to Canada, she was pregnant with twins. She became the first sitting governor in U.S. history to give birth 1 month into her term. Governor Swift joins us now. Governor Swift, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here with you today.
Great to have you. And we are talking about this set of issues for working women that has been laid in stark relief by the pandemic, for sure, but obviously already there. This is an issue that's personal to you. What were the biggest barriers for you as one of the nation's first real governor moms?
So I think that the issue for all working moms, but certainly for me in a public role, is that you get asked questions and held to a different standard than many of your male peers. And so oftentimes I did what many people call covering, because there is this underlying assumption that many voters didn't acknowledge they felt, but you knew it was there, that they doubted your ability to do the job. You would sort of hide your responsibilities or your role as a mom because you didn't want people to doubt your commitment to the job. And unfortunately, that makes it really hard to start to change the norms in the workplace if you're not acknowledging the importance of both roles that you play.
So you just talked about this different standard. I heard a podcast interview with you when you talked about the fact that you were asked about your ability to be a working mother even before you had kids, an experience that I admit is also familiar to me in my past life. This is the kind of thing that weighs on women and their perceptions of what they can achieve, what they'll be, have the runway cleared for them. You have called that the confidence gap. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it starts to weigh on you, right? Like you start to doubt your own ability. It really challenges you to be an authentic leader. I think the good news is that there's lots of emerging research, though, of ways to get around it. And as the mother of three daughters, I am really committed to making sure it's better for the women who come behind me. And so one of the things that we've learned both in boards, but also in leadership situations, is that when there's more than one woman in a leadership position, there is a safety aspect there, and you're able to start changing some of those norms. And in several of my leadership positions, when I led as a CEO of an online curriculum company, Middlebury Interactive Languages, and today at LearnLaunch, I have majority female-run organizations, and we actually get to take advantage. We have a dearth of labor because young women want to come work for us. They want to have role models who are showing how you can successfully combine work and family. So I think there can be a positive outcome to these stories, and that's what we're trying to show.
Governor Swift, let's go to the phones, 1-800-423-8255. We have Emily on the line from Somerville. Emily, you're on with Governor Jane Swift.
Hi. Yeah, I have found myself in this really strange position of having just sort of pivoted to a new career about a year before all of this started. I actually went back to nursing school as a single mother and was about to embark on this career as a nurse. And then all of this hit, and I had another child, and now I'm in this strange position where I'm equipped to really be helpful, but I also have these two children at home, and you know, my partner is working full-time. And so much has fallen on me childcare-wise that I find myself really torn. Also now afraid that this new career that I was so excited to be starting isn't going to go anywhere because they're going to look at my resume and say, well, where were you during these years? And why weren't you working through a pandemic? Yeah. I feel like, you know, I'm being torn in all of these different directions.
Thanks for sharing your story with us, Emily. Yeah, go ahead, Governor Swift, jump in.
Yeah, and please call me Jane. I embrace the title because I'm proud of what I achieved, but I also like for people to recognize me in the role I'm in now. And here's what I would say. I think these gaps in resumes because of child rearing is another issue that so many of my peers face. And Emily, I think she said was her name, really articulated so many of the challenges. So I think a couple of things. Single parents, which the Boston College professor talked about earlier, can be a particularly difficult situation. And having to figure out how you really take and balance your own career aspirations with your need to also take care of your own children is a very difficult internal struggle. And I think one of the things that I hope has changed over the last 22 years since I had my first child is that women are being more supportive of each other and the choices that we make. And so one of the things, Emily, that I hope is that this is a shared experience and many women and many men are going through it. And so there will be employment folks on the other side of the interview table who my hope is female and male will recognize and you can be open about that experience. But I recognize that it takes confidence to acknowledge the choice that you made and the challenge that you faced.
All right, I'd like to bring some additional voices in alongside you now, Governor Swift. I'm glad that you're going to stay with us for the rest of the hour. Oh, sorry, Jane. listeners, we continue to want to hear your stories. Are you a working woman or a woman with a family? What are your biggest pressure points? Or maybe you're a father or a grandparent who has had to take on new responsibilities due to this pandemic. 800-423-8255. We're going to welcome now Kim Borman, Executive Director of the Boston's Women Workforce Council, a public-private partnership between Boston and the city's business community, which works to close the gender wage gaps in Boston, and Rosario Ubiera Minaya, the Executive Director of Amplify Latinx, which works to build Latinx economic and political power in Massachusetts. Kim, Rosario, welcome to this conversation.
Thank you so much, Tiziana.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to join.
So, Rosario, let me turn to you for a minute. You are a working mom. You have two kids in middle school and high school. How have you been handling the juggle over the last several months?
It has been very stressful. It's just been hard to really balance everything that has been thrown on my plate. Again, I'm working from home. I'm also balancing, having my daughter starting high school in the middle of a pandemic and all the stress that come with that as well. And it's just been very, very stressful and overwhelming.
Kim, from the start of the pandemic, the job losses among women have been the result of both the collapse of female-dominated industries like hospitality, education, entertainment, but women are also choosing to drop out of the workforce entirely. 800,000 out of 1.1 million people between August and September were women. And we've been hearing, we just heard about strains from Rosario, we've been hearing the whole show about these strains. What else do we need to understand is going on?
Well, there's a couple things going on. One is something that the governor spoke about is that most of this isn't new. I mean, it's just been aggravated by the pandemic. But for so long, we've been talking about the needs that businesses, organizations, employers need to look at, which is of women, which is the flexibility and the idea that perhaps offering on-site childcare, backup childcare services, looking at paid family leave, new ways of evaluating your performance. It's not how many hours you put into a timesheet, but it's your outcome. These are all things that have been discussed, I'd say, for 30 years, but now they seem to be taking on much more urgency from the organizations that we speak with, and perhaps, believe it or not, there could be a silver lining coming out of all of this.
You know, Jane, I'm thinking about these resources that Kim was just talking about, the changes that we could make to give people greater flexibility. You know, you weren't without controversy when you were breaking through the barriers as lieutenant governor and then governor. During a time when your child was sick as lieutenant governor, you took a helicopter ride home from state troopers. You got some babysitting support from staffers. The public rebukes, they were fierce and they were widespread. Had some of these other supports been in place, do you think you would have made different choices then? And how do you look at that time now?
So I look at it in a variety of ways. You know, the helicopter issue, I think, is one that I wasn't supposed to say this then, but is particularly interesting because that wasn't found. There are a lot of governors who have taken helicopters for similar reasons, but it was really touching on the work family issues that so many people were stressed about. And what I have often told people privately is, I shouldn't have gone to work that day. The mistake I made was my child was sick. My husband was at the emergency room a couple hundred miles away, but I was so afraid to acknowledge with all the spotlight on me, you know, that I had to take a day off because my child was sick, because so many people had talked about how, you know, I couldn't do it and, you know, you shouldn't be so selfish and you shouldn't try to have it all. And I felt so much pressure to sort of hold up the responsibility for all these young women and my peers who I knew could do great things and were raising families, that the mistake was not taking a day off to take care of myself and my family. And so that's one of the things I talk a lot to young women about. But in terms of the silver lining, I have women that work for me now with young children. And we also are doing these online workshops for teachers across Massachusetts. And maybe not for them, but for me, the best days are when they have a 1 or 2 year old crawling all over them in the middle of a live workshop or the middle of a meeting, because I can give grace and tell them it's fine. The world isn't going to end if we stop something for 5 minutes. One of our experts was in the middle of something and their 13-year-old needed them, and we just stopped. And I was able to say, this is fine. You know, moms need the opportunity to step away. We could go 10 minutes later in the workshop. Somebody else can step in. And being able to be in a position of power where I can grant the flexibility to the folks who work for me that frankly wasn't available to me, just that's the best part of this experience for me. And I have been able to derive so much value from their life experiences and the work we're doing that I get to also see the benefit of employing working mothers.
So let's go to the phones again, and then I want to turn back to Rosario. We've got Lena on the line from Andover. Lena, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for discussing this important topic. And I would like to say that, first of all, I'm very fortunate that I still have my job, and I work in biotechnology. That means I have to go to work every day. We never closed for COVID because, as you know, cancer doesn't wait for COVID to end. And at the same time, I have a son who is 10 years old right now, and he actually goes to school twice a day. And it's actually very difficult for me to make sure I go to work every day, because 3 days out of those 5, he's at home. And my husband is also full-time employer, so employee. So what I'm trying to say is that why our public schools can't safely open like private schools did to provide in-person learning. I do understand all the concerns, but at the same time, it's almost impossible to keep a 10-year-old child on its own. So in my case, I'm actually lucky because I was able to move my mom, so he stays with my grandmother. But at the same time, I know
but not everyone has that.
Have to quit their jobs because no one is available to stay with children.
Lena, thank you so much for that call. And Rosario, Lena's talking about her particular case. We also know, you know, I gave that data earlier, 800,000 of the 1.1 million people dropping out of the workforce between August and September were women. Latina women have left the workforce at nearly three times the rate of white women, four times the rate of African-American women. What institutionally, what structurally, what public policy-wise are we getting wrong that we need to adjust?
Well, it's been mentioned throughout the conversation today that, which is no news, that Black and Latinx communities have collectively faced some of the most damaging economic and health effects of the coronavirus. And the trends that we are seeing will have lasting consequences for both household budgets and the broader economy. We've been hearing that and seeing that data. But in terms of the Latino community, and especially Latinas, we are seeing generations of wealth and the advancement that we collectively have achieved in decades of work disappearing in front of our eyes. We are seeing Latina entrepreneurs losing their businesses, closing businesses in the community. We see, as you mentioned, the Latinx workers leaving the workforce. And you know, Latina workers are heavily represented in occupations that have been affected by COVID shutdowns. Many Latina work in industries that have been hammered by the pandemic. So as we see the overall unemployment rate decreased, the unemployment rate for Latinas have increased. And they've been laid off, and the schools have been, like you have been mentioned too, schools and daycares are closed and children are sent home. So our child care and school systems don't meet the needs of the working mothers. We've seen all of these disruptions really affecting disproportionately. Latinas have been hit very, very hard during this process. We are the backbone of our families, and we traditionally have been torn between bettering ourselves and growing professionally and providing for our families to maintaining the more traditionally a stay-at-home mom situation and always being available for the care of our children and to support our household. So all of that is really affecting disproportionately, like I mentioned, Latinas and the reasons why they're leaving the workforce at this point.
We've been spending this hour talking about work in the pandemic, and we're focused now on working women, whether you're a working mother, a single woman, wherever you are in the workforce. Still with us are our panelists, former Massachusetts Governor Jane Swift, Kim Borman, who is Executive Director of the Boston Women's Workforce Council, and Rosario Ubiera Minaya, the Executive Director of Amplify Latinx. We want to continue to take your calls at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm going to grab a caller right here. We've got Rachel on the line from Everett. Rachel, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I am newer to the workforce. I'm 25. I just recently graduated, and I am a working woman, but I don't have some of the issues around childcare. But I just wanted to say that for people my age who are just breaking into their fields, like I, for example, work in sustainability and higher education, but it's really hard in a couple ways to see some of my colleagues struggle so much and to feel like, oh, I really don't have anything to complain about. All I have to worry about is my husband and myself. But I think it's hard and overwhelming to see people you care about struggle so much. And then it's hard to think as a young person who just got into their career in this new world of working from home, what is this going to look like? For us who just started maybe a job in an office, or I like the word that someone used before, like a knowledge worker, like, are we going to do this forever now? I know someone also said, you know, this might what be some people's job is forever working from home.
Rachel, thank you for that. And I'm going to give Kim Borman a chance to respond. Kim, please.
I think, Rachel, that my own feeling is that there will be more choice. And not everybody will work from home, but not everyone will be in an office either. And one thing that is happening is everyone has experienced this at one time. So this will not look like you know, different on your resume than anybody else's, and you're working through it. So what I would say is what we're hearing from the employers that are part of the 100% Talent Compact, meaning that they sign a pledge with us to make sure that they're going to eliminate any kind of gender wage gap. They are definitely looking at their younger employers and how do they bring them in and how do they train them and how do they make sure that they're getting the same kind of experience that they might get if they were in the office. So what I can tell you from what I'm hearing from our members is that people understand what you're going through and they're working as hard as they can towards it to try to make the experience as best they can, sort of normal.
So, Rosaria, let me turn back to you. What do we need to see from employers and government, let's say over the next 12 months, to ensure that women, working women, both recover from the losses of this pandemic, but don't wind up sort of a permanent extra step behind from the way this pandemic has played out?
Our organization, Amplify Latinx, focuses on leadership representation and really acquiring wealth for the Latinx community in order to advance our community. I believe as a working mom, as a Latina, as a professional woman that has been in the workforce for over 20 years, that's what we need in order to advance our community and really address the underlying issues that we are seeing affecting our community. We really need leadership representation in decision-making positions, but Latinas have been emerging as prominent leaders in corporate positions for a while, but they're also leaving corporate America at an alarming rate. Many Latinas place a significant emphasis on spending time together as a family, something that corporate America understands and values, but doesn't often accommodate well. So we really believe that we really need to focus on acquiring wealth and capital, resources that really support Latinas in either staying in the workforce, opening their own businesses, or opportunities for leadership representation, more decision-making opportunities in C-suite roles, boardrooms across sectors, really getting to that level of decision-making. And that has to be done collectively. And we have to think about policies and advocate for support, not only in the in the legislature, but also in the private sector as well.
Let's go to Saray, a caller from Newton. Saray, go ahead.
Hi, I'm very interested in listening to your speakers and people who are calling in. I'm chief of surgery at Newton Wellesley Hospital and also a scientist and manage, you know, research program at MGH. And I'm really worried about our women surgeons, physicians in the front line, as well as our scientists, because they're having to deal with a lot at home, very disruptive care of their children, a lot of stress at home because, you know, they were used to having really either their children in school full time, after school programs, child care at home, nannies, it's all been disrupted. And yet we have to come to work, obviously, and take care of the patients and everything that's needed. But there really hasn't been great accommodation for us and, you know, the surgical residents, yeah, everyone. So I'm very concerned.
Thanks for the call, Saray, and for your work at Newton Wellesley. I imagine this is a particularly challenging time to do what you do. Jane, what about the pressure, the unpredictability, the chaos of that while trying to deal with high-pressure, chaotic jobs?
Yeah, I think that is a particular stress. I'd be interested to hear what MGH and Brigham is doing to support those workers. I think that one of the points that Rosaria brought up was a really good one, that often these issues are much more overwhelming around class, and you find that the folks with the least amount of capital to be able to find flexibility and to find solutions are people with less means. So focusing on wealth creation, focusing on small businesses is, outside of a pandemic, generally a great way to address the inequities. Unfortunately, in this crisis, some of the very paths that have inoculated working women from the stresses, like being high achievers in science and in healthcare or being small business owners, have actually been some of the most heavy burdens and taken some of the brunt of the economic and workforce challenges. And I think that we have not seen nimbleness from our federal government in the response to creating unique supports. And that should be, I hope, one of the things that gets focused on in this next round of supports when Congress and a new administration gets back to work.
Kim, let me just ask you, are there any pivots that the Boston Women's Workforce Council has made as a result of the pandemic, or new things you're focusing on, or places you're placing more emphasis than before?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, and it actually goes to Mass General Brigham. We give something out. It's called the Innovative Initiatives Award. We do this at our Effective Practices Conference, which actually happens to be on Thursday. And usually we ask companies who are our compact signers to apply for something that they have done in three or four categories that have to do with advancing women. And one of the categories this year was supporting women during COVID. And it's interesting. That's the only category that got any applications. And in fact, Mass General Brigham, I don't want to give it away, is going to win one for a program that they did for women doctors in trying to get them into grand rounds internationally because they can't travel. Now, the point of this is they couldn't travel before very much either because they had the commitment of kids at home. And so hopefully this is going to be something that gets translated from not just now during COVID, but to, everyday life, because it's a way that that women need to actually focus their career on more international settings so that they can get promoted. And in fact, it has happened that close to 10 out of the people that have done this program are being promoted this year. So it is working.
So we're at that funny moment where I don't really have enough time for another caller or another question, but we have a touch of time left in the show. So all I'm going to do is flag a call we didn't get to from Mary in Magnolia, Massachusetts. And I want to flag it because what she had wanted to talk to us was about ageism, the challenge for women in their 50s and 60s who are now being displaced and will struggle to find another job. And I just want to note that because it hasn't been part of our conversation today. And it's something that I think is going to be worth its own attention. And maybe we should try to focus on in a future segment here on Radio Boston. I want to take a minute now to thank our guests. We had former Massachusetts Governor Jane Swift, Kim Borman, who is Executive Director of the Boston Women's Workforce Council, which is a public-private partnership between Boston and the city's business community to work on closing gender wage gaps, and Rosario Ubiera Minaya, the Executive Director of Amplify Latinx, which is launched by the nonprofit Latina Circle and works to build Latinx economic and political power in Massachusetts. Thanks to all three of you for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening and calling in today. That's our show. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Tune in tomorrow for more Radio Boston.